Hello, everyone. Hello, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. I'm Kay Thompson, and we are going to be talking to a very exciting guest tonight. Geez, lots of snow outside. I'm telling you, the snow is coming down. It's still coming down. It's been snowing all day and all night, and boy, we are all snowed in here in New Jersey and in New York, and the traffic is so awful, and everything is just going on. But anyway, we're going to be having a very exciting show on tonight. We're going to be talking to Roosevelt Weaver, and he is a runner. He is a... Stop. We're trying to figure out. Yeah, Roosevelt Bo Weaver, Dr. Beaver, sprint specialist. You know, absolutely, and he has been traveling all over the world, and he trains young runners, and we're going to find out a lot about him today here on Kay Thompson Live, here on Blog Talk Radio, here in New Jersey. I can't get over this weather, yes. Can you?
It's yes. Been a little cold out here. This is Citizen Payne, and this is obviously the Kay Thompson Live show on Blog Talk Radio, and it's been, the nor'easter has been something. Hopefully, like we say on the thing, it's the last one of the season there, because it's a lot of snow today.
Yeah.
And you said we have Dr. Weaver supposed to be calling into the show. Also, I think we have some interesting news going on nowadays with that. Why don't we have Dr. Weaver on the line, or we can start talking to introduce our other two co-hosts.
They're going to be calling in a little later. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
I want to talk about, you know, Bo Weaver here in New Jersey. You know, he has quite an extensive, background and a runner. He's an international, trainer. And here in New Jersey, he's also a sprint specialist. And let me just tell you, Harvard University receives doctors of education from Harvard, Simmons College in Boston, Massachusetts, Atlanta University, Yankton, South Dakota Bachelor of Arts, Physiology, Sociology, Principal of Toussaint Louverture School in East Orange, also served as director of East Orange Public Schools. In other words, he's taught school, been a principal. He did some work in Hanover, New Jersey. He worked for the Head Start Project in Dorchester, Massachusetts, Cambridge, Massachusetts. He supervised as a professional volunteer staff coach trainer. Institute National des Sports in Dakar, Senegal, and West Africa. Coach Senegalese National Olympic Track Teams, permanent substitute teacher in Atlanta, Monmouth College, Long Branch, New Jersey, Mercy College, Hanover, New Jersey. So much. So what a, wow, I'm really very impressed. Recipient of the Haitian Americans Bicentennial Award, recipient of the inaugural Franklin Williams Award, named in honor of the Peace Corps founder. So many things. Geraldine Dodge Foundation School for Leadership and so forth and so on. And he is here with us in here in New Jersey. And we're waiting for him to call in. And boy, is this weather is absolutely awful. Eric, are you on?
This is Roosevelt.
Yes.
Yes, Roosevelt. Okay. Hi, Bo. How are you? Dr. Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Where'd you get that name from?
The name Bo?
No, Dr. Speed.
Well, I was training at one time some players from New York Giants football team, and one of them began to call me Dr. Speed. So I used that name as I train young people.
Oh, because I can see you, man. I need to see you. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You're good.
So that's how I got the name.
And you traveled all over the world. How is it you found, in fact, you were in the U.S. Department of State in Helsinki, Finland.
Well,
in Africa.
I lecture in Norway, Finland, and Sweden. I was there for a few weeks. And in Senegal, I spent 3 years in Dakar, which is the capital of Senegal. I was there with the Peace Corps. I was in the first Peace Corps group, but it was a very specialized group. We were there to train and work with the Olympic track team, and I was the assistant coach for the sprints. I coached the 100 meters, 200, and 400 meter sprinters. And that was a great experience. It was interesting in terms of working in a culture that is very unique, and I had to learn to speak French and also somewhat Wolof, which is the major language of the tribal groups in Senegal.
In West Africa.
It's the most western point of Africa, below Mauritania and near Guinea. So that's where I spent most of my time.
I didn't go to Tokyo.
The Olympic team went. It was during the Tokyo Olympic Games. I went to France with the team. They trained at the Institut International de Sportif in Vincennes, France, and I was there with them. But the ministers of sports and the delegation from Senegal went, but I worked with the team until they left for Tokyo. And when they returned, I continued to train the national team, work with the national team, but I was very fortunate to be able to work in three different countries. I was in Cote d'Ivoire, which is Ivory Coast. I worked with their sprinters there. And then I went to Niger, which is near Nigeria, in the northern part of Nigeria.
Wow. And you, I see here you're also consultant to President Jimmy Carter's transitional planning team.
Yes, I was, you know, being from Georgia, I was very fortunate to be able to do this. I was attending a meeting at Harvard Club in New York, and I met people from the school education, and one of them was very kind enough to recommend me to work on the transitional team. So I was in Washington, D.C. for a period of time, and it was quite an education for me to work in that department with all of the layers of people and the difficulties in learning to deal in terms of the informal network. What I mean is learning people and their background and their points of view.
Also, you were a consultant and group leader for the United States Department of State in Helsinki, Finland.
I was very lucky and very fortunate to be able to run workshops in Helsinki for the teachers dealing with cross-culture education. For example, there were groups that lived in the northern part of Finland, and they were not a part of the mainstream, and the education system was trying to integrate them into the culture and education program. And what I wanted to work with them in is not to have them to completely assimilate and lose their culture identity, but be able to understand both cultures, but not give up who they were.
Also, excuse me, I'm so, you know, Boston University School of Social Work, Harvard, Assistant Varsity Track Coach, Emerson College, Cambridge, Massachusetts, early public schools, Boston, Columbia Point Special Summer Project, working with Black alienated youth. You were also in the Marine Corps for five times you get in the Marine Corps, serving 4 years as an active member.
Well, I was really, I joined the Marines when I was 17 years old, and I did very well on the written tests. Unfortunately, during that particular time, it was segregated at the base, and I went for my physical, and they told me I was disqualified because I was physically unfit. So for 6 months, I went to different hospitals and took all kinds of examinations, and the commandant of the Marine Corps wrote a letter, and I was accepted into the Marine Active Reserve. So we trained in boot camp, and then we traveled to California and other places. I was in the Marine Air Wing, and there I met a Marine officer who got me a scholarship to a school in South Dakota. I left Georgia and went to South Dakota, which was very unique. I was one of the first blacks out there, and only two of us were in school.
Wow. I have to tell people that the static that we are hearing is because of the weather. It's still snowing very, very hard here in New Jersey. So I want to let people know about that. But, you know, let me get back to some more of your accomplishments and your traveling. You also spent time in Columbia, in Boston, Columbia Point Special Summer Project, working with Black alienated youth. What's that all about?
Well, Alvin Poussaint, who was a leading professor, a psychiatrist at Harvard, he was also a psychiatrist for Bill Cosby's show. We became friends, and I invited him over to the school where I was working, and he was an amazing person because at that time, many black youngsters were very concerned about their skin color, and they felt ashamed of being black. And he was a specialist in that particular area, and we worked with these students. But in the meantime, Columbia Point was one of the most violent communities in Boston at that time. Young blacks were in gangs, and kids were being hurt. And we went out to work with them on their self-identity and try to improve their self-image so they developed a process by which they had a purpose in life besides using a violent behavior. And what we found is that some of these little boys were so brilliant, and their skills on the streets were incredible. So we tried to incorporate those skills into a positive behavior type of situation, and we saw great results from that.
Also, the Haitian American Bicentennial Award. What was all that about?
Well, I was principal of a school in East Orange, New Jersey, and we had a large Haitian population of students, and there was a great deal of conflict between African American and Haitian Americans. And what I began to do is to bring them together and share experiences and help them understand their historical background. For instance, we taught them about Toussaint Louverture, the Haitian revolutionary.
Yeah,
we talked about the
Haitian
culture. So I was able to convince the Board of Education to name the school after Toussaint Louverture. It was called École Toussaint Louverture. And the Haitian community were so happy that someone stood up for them in terms of recognition. So I received that award.
And you did a lot in East Orange, New Jersey. And you were selected the Geraldine Dodge Foundation Fellow for School Leadership Who's Who in American Education, U.S. Peace Corps' highest appreciation award for outstanding contributions to world peace and friendship through support of the Peace Corps programs and recruitment, selected as National Fellow for the National Association of Elementary School Principals, North America's 100 Top Executive Educators, recognized by Roxbury Program, Boston, Massachusetts. Well, wait a minute, let me go on. Yankton, South Dakota, was that?
Yes.
Harvard University, Phi Delta Kappa, Harvard University's Graduate School of Education, honors recipient of the Dwight D. Eisenhower Scholarship, Yankton faculty in Midwest, Tri-State, Waltham, not finished, Harvard Alumni Associates, Massachusetts Conference on Social Welfare, member of five-man committee against police brutality. Now, what was that about?
Well, I lived in Cambridge, and I taught black history, and there was a conflict between the black students and white students. And the superintendent and principal of the school panicked. They didn't know what to do. So I was caught in between, and I was able to work with both groups, but I used that opportunity to become a change agent. By that, I mean that we saw there was no black teachers, administrators, so we organized, and we were able to bring new people into the education system, but it was a very difficult process because the students of African-American descent and parents began to support me, and we were able to bring about changes. But at the same time, there was a lot of police brutality, particularly when black young men would go to Harvard Square, which is where Harvard is located, begin to arrest them because they didn't want them there with those nice Ivy League students. And I became a leader in terms of bringing this to city council, and we were able to bring about changes there.
Yeah? Okay. Listen, also, Africa, Senegal, Niger, Ivory Coast, the Cameroon, Northern and Southern Europe. You have knowledge of French, and of course you were talking about you have not only French, well, English naturally, but Wolof, that's the Senegalese language, right?
Yes, Wolof.
And also your national class. Go ahead. I'm just amazed.
Well,
I said also your national. Go ahead.
I was what? I was just saying, you know, so many things in life happen with just being nice to people and people support you. I didn't, this wasn't my, I never thought I would go to Harvard. I didn't have those goals in mind. Things happened because I met people and they recommended me because of our relationship. And one of the areas when I work with young people and speak in school is to encourage our young people to learn to network in the informal situation, but also learn to be kind, but also stand up for what you believe in as a person, as a particular, as an African-American.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're so glad to have you on the air. You know, we're going to be bringing in our other, you know, host to the show. Eric Payne is on. Wayne Gilman is on. Byron Saunders is on. Let's see if we can get them on to also participate in this conversation. I mean, wow.
Okay,
guys.
Hey, you guys got a question?
Byron,
I just wanted to ask.
Or Eric?
Yes, I am. I am here. And we have a mutual friend in Lloyd Tyke Riddick.
That's my friend.
I know you know. Yes, that's your friend.
Indeed.
And he, of course, is a world-class sprinter as well. I think the last time we spoke, you had mentioned that he never was able to beat you on the track. So,
you know, he was one of my major competitors, and we were good friends.
Yes.
And
yes,
at the pin relays, the last time I ran against him, he was sitting behind me, and a young boy who I coached looked at him and said, "Aren't you worried about him?" I said, "No, he's worried about me." So I won the race. But, you know, being competitive and meeting friends like my friend there, he was just an amazing person because when, you know, you're on the track, you get discouraged. We support one another. It wasn't just about winning. It was about friendship.
And Dr. Weaver, this is Eric.
Yeah. Eric?
Dr. Weaver, this is Eric Payne. I also,
yes.
I'm just learning, as I'm listening to you now speak, that not only did you have a career as a track coach, but you also had a career as an educator.
Yes.
That's correct?
Yes.
And, that also took you to have these experiences as well. So it was a dual thing. You were a teacher and you became a track coach as well? Because interesting it is when you're helping to fight those battles up there in Boston during those kind of crucial times.
Well, actually, I was the first black principal in the state of New Hampshire, which was a very interesting dynamic because it was located in Hanover where Dartmouth College is located. And I was the only black living in that area at that time in terms of, from an education perspective. I have a couple of black professors. It was very difficult. I went there to get my certification because I knew that if I didn't have a certification, I would not be able to go to any other state. But I stayed there for 2 years, which was a great learning experience. But one of my goals was to instill in our young people the not giving up when difficult situations occur. And I think the Marine Corps helped me a lot in being at Harvard where the competition was so competitive that you stick with situations.
Yeah, and that's also, I mean, obviously, that not only is that a military discipline that you have, but it makes sense that your expertise in athletics and training people to be sprinters, all that's hand in hand, right? In terms of education.
Absolutely.
And athletics. And
well,
and
you
that's
I'm running next week in the national championship in the 60 meter dash in Maryland, and I've been training. I won the state championship 2 weeks ago in New Jersey in the 60 meters, and it's just discipline, you know. I'll be 81 in April.
Wow.
And I'm still able to maintain a certain amount of speed. So it's discipline and dedication.
Yeah, we're also Eric, I think Wayne Gilman might be on also now. Are you there, Wayne?
Yeah,
are you there?
I've been here. Good evening, everyone, and Mr. Weaver, or is it Dr. Weaver? Forgive me.
Fine.
But I'm inspired by the fact that you're 81 because I'm looking at that in the eye now, and I kind of wonder, you know, what is the elixir for longevity apart from, you know, I don't know if you've ever been married. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm married. Yeah, I've been married for 34 years. But,
Well, I guess I won't last that long.
You will. But the fact is that I've been very blessed. My wife works in Dallas. And she's a Reno social worker. And she's very aware of dialysis and what the etiology of it in terms of what causes it. And she's very conscious of what I eat. And, and I eat very special meals, such as a lot of vegetables and nuts, fruit, not too much red meat, lot of, what else should I say, the vegetables like avocado, eat a lot of spinach, broccoli.
But that's,
and
that's
fish.
Part of the discipline, right, Dr. Weaver? I mean, you stay in shape, too. I mean, you've been in shape all your life. You know, and that's a testament to why we need to keep active, why people need to keep moving, right?
Exactly.
Well, you know, I try to encourage our young men, particularly African American, that eating habits is so critical. and rest. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing people don't realize how important rest. Now, sometimes I work out 2 times a day, but I come home and take a nap, and I go to bed around 9:30, and I get up early, but rest is very important. And meditation, I do meditation, and I go to a holistic doctor where I do the tapping, and it's just a lot of things that you have to put in place in terms of being able to function.
Sure.
How do you handle stress, if you don't mind?
Well, in the mornings, I have this thing I do about gratification in terms of I'm thankful for health, wealth, good friendship, and I try to emphasize the importance of people, the people around you who are positive. And I try in my experiences with young people to share positive vibes, as Bob Marley called, because it's so important.
That's very true.
Yeah. Interesting, interesting.
Anything else you guys want to ask Dr. Bo?
I think that there should be Dr. Weaver, I think there should
I
be
a question,
lot of
Byron, here. I have a question. What is your time in the 60? I don't want to challenge you because I'm afraid that you might kick my butt, but what is your time?
He will. Don't drive, Byron.
Yes. Now, I used to run track. I used to run track, so I'm not afraid. Mm. It's just that I am amazed that an 81-year-old man is the state champion in the 60 and at his
age.
Isn't
that something?
You know, that's incredible. You're a superhero.
That's remarkable. He is, and his call got dropped momentarily. So, Dr. Bo, if you could call back in. I've seen that we had a little technical difficulty, you know, here with the storm. So his call, his number got dropped from the conversation. But that is remarkable at his age.
It is.
That he's, isn't it? I mean, you know, we could all three of us start training. We could run in the senior division. We could have a little relay team, you know.
you mean to try to catch up with him? Yes.
Yeah.
You remember that episode of the Cosby Show, the Huxtables, when Cliff went down, he was training with his boys to have that relay team again.
Oh yeah.
That could be us.
Vaguely, yeah.
But
is amazing.
Weaver, if he calls back in, if we could get him to call back in, if not. I just wanted to get everybody's opinion. You know, we got some special things going on in the news right now.
Yeah.
And I know you guys wanted to comment on that. Where do we begin is really the question, right? Do you want to start with the lowest? Do we want to start with the lowest that we got a sitting president getting sued by a porn star? Or want to start a little higher with the tariffs? I don't know.
Well,
it's like pick your poison over here.
Eric, I'll start with the lowest of the hanging fruit. Okay. No pun intended. Okay.
Oh, I was just wondering.
Here's the reality check of all. We are being confronted with a individual who is the so-called leader of the free world.
Byron, let's just put a pin in it real quick. We got Dr. Weaver to call back.
Let's wrap it up with
him real quick and say goodnight to him, and then we can jump off this real quick. All right? I think Dr. Weaver's back on the line there.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and it's a pleasure always to talk to you great men, and I would hope that we'll talk again
in
the future. Let me forget her. Okay. She's number one.
Bo.
You know that. Okay. So thanks so much.
All the best.
Okay.
All right.
Listen.
Au revoir.
Good luck.
Au revoir.
Good luck to you. Bye-bye. Au revoir.
Go, Kay.
Yeah.
Wow.
You want to say goodbye to Dr. Weaver? You want to say goodbye to Dr. Weaver, your special guest tonight? All right. Well, that's her goodbye. All right. Let's continue where you were saying, Byron. You're
okay.
Why don't you continue on with your thought?
Well,
you know,
we're dealing with
a little bit of you know, hassle with the, because of the weather, I think, Eric. So, but anyway,
right,
okay. Dr. Bo Weaver is really, I mean, his resume,
his
history is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
We haven't even, approached a lot of it.
Okay.
So he's also a teacher.
Right. Okay. Well, that was a great interview. That was a great interview. Let's move on to the current events now. We were saying, talking about Trump. Let's move into that area now real quick. And,
yeah.
Okay. Finish your point.
Okay. The low-hanging fruit on this is the sadness of it is our current president of the United States is supposed to be the leader of the free world. And you cannot be the leader of the free world with your moral compass broken and perverted as this individual is. She's not just the first of the women who've come and made claims of his perverted lifestyle. There's another one who is paid $150,000. So right now at $280,000 paid to porn star and call girls, and you call yourself the moral leader of our country. That is unacceptable. It's an abomination. Not to mention your political concepts. You are bankrupting our country in the same manner in which you bankrupted your businesses, and you're dragging us into the abyss of your perverted lifestyle as well as your failed business acumen, and I'll stop right there.
Yeah,
well said.
You know,
I
don't even like to mention his name. We're talking about Dr. Beat Weaver, and then we mentioned Donald Trump. Please,
yeah,
okay.
Right.
His reputation. He may be the president of the United States, but I'm telling you one thing: I'll be glad when he's gone. He's one of the most violent presidents. How do you justify his existence even? And you know, that entire country, for the people who voted for him, you get what you sow. I mean, you know, if I'm wrong, I can barely even talk about him because I don't trust him. He is not to be trusted with his reputation. He's making fun of the office of the presidency.
Yes.
He doesn't even, he can't even lift the shoes of Barack Obama. Is he kidding? Drop his name. Drop his existence, for goodness sake.
Right. Unfortunately, we wish we could do that, but we can't. The whole world can't. It's interesting how he is affecting everybody. What were you going to say, Wayne?
No, I happen to agree with everybody. I mean, the thing is, this is the latest low in this decadent behavior. It just saddens me. But at the same time, I have sincere and great optimism that at some point, I was listening to Byron last week with his timing in terms of the end of this administration, but it just seems like the noose is tightening now. You know, the Mueller investigation is leaving no stone unturned, and there's so much that's coming out of that perhaps before the year is over, there could be a change. There could very well be a change. And I think a lot of us hate to live with this pall hanging over our head because, you know, at the end of the day, this is our survival as a nation on the planet. You know, he's done everything. I mean, it's one thing to go against the grain and to engage in things that would be considered popular. You know, there is a segment of the country that would prefer the tax break that we've gotten. There's a segment of the country that probably believes that the tariffs are very important. But the thing is, you have to weigh what the majority thinks. And that's it.
Yeah.
And as far as the moral compass is concerned, you know, I can't imagine how Sarah Huckabee can stand up there day after day and carry water for this guy as a woman. You know,
well,
I heard her on The Beauty
the
other day, a couple of days ago, and, you know, she comes out with all sorts of justification. course, she had a daddy there with him the morning that I watched the show. But the bottom line is, man, Trump is, he's just bad news, you know. It's just sickening.
Yeah, you know what, Wayne, where that leads me to what you're saying with the tariffs, and there's a very slim, narrow majority of people are with it. It's almost like with these particular tariffs that there's going to be a lot of other kind of companies. I was looking at the news earlier today. There was a guy, a farmer in California, had almonds, and his business goes all over the world. So he was a lot of these people are concerned with the tariffs being affected that way. But it's almost, and judging from his joking the other day about president for life, when he was referring to the president of China. And if you also look at the more current revelations about Eric Prince, Betsy DeVos's brother, meeting with the guy in the Seychelles as the back channels for Russia through the Arab Emirates guy. And allegedly this guy, Eric Prince, was the representative for the Trump organization. If you look, stand back and look at the consolidation of power and some of these moves that these guys are making in terms of this guy, Eric Prince, has got his own army. You know, he's got Blackwater. That's his own private mercenaries. And Trump talking about the president for life. And now some of these tariffs, you know, only the very elite rich survive these type of rocky things going on in the stock market, right? And so what happens is that it almost seems like they're kind of even more consolidate wealth to a very, very few. And obviously, you know, we've seen that happen in history too before, where wealth gets consolidated to a very, very few individuals in nations, in countries. Then you kind of have that dictatorship thing going on, and they don't even make the pretense of having democracies anymore, right? So
I agree. I mean, the thing is, Americans will pay ultimately for this.
Yeah, okay. Now listen, guys. I don't want to hear anything more about Trump. Okay, not another word. Giving him a lot of more credit? Listen, let's talk about the Black Panther movie and what kind of significance does it have to the black community. I don't want to hear anything more about Trump.
I understand.
Trump.
Let's just finish. We all want to do that. Let's just finish this conversation real quick. We'll talk about Black Panther in a minute. But it's hard. A lot of people have Trump fatigue and that kind of syndrome. But we got to keep our eye on this guy, especially. It's interesting to be able to try and watch what they're all doing, because while you're watching Trump, then you got to worry about what Jared is doing, right? He's somewhere doing these things and have his back channels to build his family businesses. And when these individuals are using these opportunities, their political position at the same time get contracts. So, you know, I understand
dump Trump.
It is.
I don't want to hear more about Trump.
I agree with you 100%. But this is the first time in my particular life.
If I might, I just would like to say one thing. You know, there are very few places in this, not just only in this market, across the country, where you hear a black perspective of what's going on. I'm not saying you could tune in to MSNBC, you could tune in to CNN, and you see people of color commenting on situations that are going on politically in this country right now. But the importance of this program is to have at least a mouthpiece. I'm not saying that the Black Panther film is not important. As far as I'm concerned, Bo Weaver was the Black Panther, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things.
Absolutely.
But it just saddens me. You know, day after day, there's so many things going on. And what Eric was just pointing out about as far as the impact of the tariffs, it's important. I mean, everybody out here is suffering economically. We don't need another burden. He's already gone after the blue states when it comes to the tax breaks, you know. Anyone that voted Democrat or Democratic strongholds will be impacted this year in 2018 unless Congress has a way of just ending this break. You know, it's going to have a severe impact, particularly in the area of real estate, you know. And these are issues that we have to bring up time and again. And I mean this with kindness, no disrespect. I know this is your program, but I just had to say that.
Well, also, too, what I'm finding, we should dump him. What I'm finding, Mom, is that the first time in my life, even more so when I was a kid and went on a couple of marches with you guys,
during the early 60s with you and Dad, around the time Dr. King was still alive. Really, for the first time in my life, I found myself at a point in history where there is really extreme blatant racism, and also a guy who's almost, you know, he is a kind of, he's a racist president. And not only is he that, he's all the things, the bad things that you hear about politics and the presidency, and he doesn't care, and he thumbs his nose, and maybe that's the thing about the whole kind of facade to me about America, is that we kind of act with a certain amount of decorum, so certain people, when they get in certain positions in government and things like that, some of them kind of rise to a higher occasion. Some of them kind of rise to that occasion to say, you know, this is greater than my personal beliefs. I mean, I think about, you know, when John McCain was running for president, and the lady hopped up against Barack and hopped up and wanted to call Barack Obama an Arab. And John McCain could have taken the Trump route. You know, at that time, he could have taken the Trump route.
Right.
And that would have been kind of a scorched earth approach. And Trump's approach is a scorched earth one. I mean, you know, we know that the majority of white people voted for McCain. The majority of white people voted for Romney and obviously for Trump. And so it's really an important thing to be aware at this point in history that more of us pay attention and more of us are required. And the whole thing about Black Panther, when that fits in from a cultural aspect, is that a lot more black people are, I think, getting back to the ways of the 60s when you see these old footage reels of how African Americans dressed and presented themselves in public during those days. It was as if, to me, when I look back, that every member of the race knew that we had something to uphold. We had something to project to the rest of the world about ourselves that was not the narrative that America was putting out there. You know, back, just a more formal time. But during that era, you more so see that, you know, people like Dr. King and just the average working people who are out there trying to, you know, when they decided to protest, there was a certain way that they presented themselves because they knew the value of the steps and the progress that was being made. And I think that...
What about the possibility... What about the possibility of a new voice, a new face running for the presidency? What about Oprah Winfrey running for the presidency? Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Okay,
that would be. Let's talk about it to try and convince.
Let's talk about it.
She always said no, but she would be. You know, she would be. Obviously, she would win. I think, but
I think so too.
The notion that. I don't know about you guys, maybe Byron, you want to chime in here, because the notion that performers and entertainers and athletes shouldn't have, and since we're kind of from the performing aspect, shouldn't have that platform and should not have a political perspective is ludicrous in my mind, because that's kind of what feeds art, you know? Your influences in the world that you are inspire you to create the art sometimes. And when there is strife, when there is conditions of man that's oppressive of man, the artist is usually the one that reflects that in society. And so this whole notion that they don't want artists because they know artists have a great deal of influence, right? So they don't want to use that influence for public change.
What about the Academy Awards the other night? The status of Whoopi Goldberg. Okay?
Right.
Here's the danger of a entertainer being considered, not that they would not be popular, okay, but the danger that our nation is right now is as a result of having politicians who are corrupted by special interest groups. Now, with respect to the one we have in right now, he did not win the popular vote. Okay, he's popular, and it shows right now that he is clueless to the construct of government. Government cannot and never will, especially this United States government historically, cannot and will not ever run like a Wall Street business. It's not set up to be that. It's set up to be a not-for-profit industry.
Byron.
And thus, hold on, I'm getting back to Oprah and Whoopi, because popular, they would indeed be the most popular. But can our government
now, Byron,
be saved? Hold on. Can our government be saved by just popular celebrities? It has to
Byron,
be saved because the three branches of government right now are broken. And it's going
you
to take more than a popular celebrity
to fix it.
You're making me angry, Byron.
Okay. What's making you angry, Bob? That
Trump,
Oprah?
I don't want to hear anything about Trump. You're only giving him more coverage. I don't want coverage on the show of Trump.
I'm covering the picture of
the Academy
government.
Awards the other night. I want to talk about the Academy Awards the other night.
All right.
Okay,
let's get there. All right.
The significance
we
of Whoopi Goldberg. Meant to talk about Whoopi Goldberg. She doesn't live too far from here.
Okay,
get off of Trump.
Great.
I don't want to give you that name.
And
okay. Well, we're talking. Hold on.
Can you hear me, Byron?
Hold on for a second, please.
Hold on for a second.
Now, what we're talking about was the influence in artists and having an undue influence in the rest of the world, and why some politicians, particularly Republicans, don't want artists. Whenever artists, you talked about Oprah, right? That's why they're concerned, because you have someone like Oprah or a movie star or Whoopi. Or the people on the Oscars, they have a great platform. Because of what they do through the arts, they affect people in a certain way. They connect with people. And therefore, what a lot of politicians don't want that to happen, they don't want people to make that connection. They don't want people to be swayed by the connection they feel with the artist, because artists have a great deal of power, you know, like singers and people like that. That's why people sing. That's why people cry when they meet certain singers, because the songs they've written have helped these people at points in their life. They've struck people at different points in their life. So when you talk about someone like Oprah or any other artist, that's why, when we, as it relates to politics, Ma, that's why the politicians have a problem with some of those individuals running for office. But that's why it's connected. The two are connected, because if done the right way, it can have great amount of social change. Politics is just the way that change comes about in certain areas.
Of course, I realize that, but I'm not going to be a Trump advocate. I don't even want to hear his name, because he's not to be trusted.
Okay.
You know,
I have a question
right
for you, Kay.
Let's calm down a little bit.
Here's the question for all of us. And especially for my leader, Kay Thompson Live, who I love dearly.
No.
Now, Kay,
what do you think
Oprah or Whoopi would be able to achieve in fixing our broken democracy as it is at this moment? Because we are talking about 2020. And at the point at which, if they're to be the presumptive candidate, what credentials do they have, in your opinion, since that's your candidate of a choice, to fix what is broken with our democracy?
I'll drop this question back at you. What credentials did Trump have other than money? You tell me that,
none.
Byron.
He had
what,
none.
What credentials?
I can tell you that.
Bingo.
One answer. None.
All right. Then dump Trump. I don't want to hear another word about Trump.
I didn't bring up Trump's name. I want to know
what do you think Oprah and Whoopi
could achieve in fixing what is broken right now? Because this is important. Our democracy is in an abyss and on the edge of really tanking as an empire. And it can go down quickly.
Do you think that an Oprah Winfrey would qualify for that office?
Yes. No, it's not that she wouldn't qualify.
No.
It's just that in working with the three branches of government, she would have to have an operative operation working with a Congress and a judicial system that would be able to balance the assets that she would bring to the table.
Byron.
Yes.
Byron, you're talking over me.
I'm here. No.
And I don't like
that. Okay.
Yeah. Hello. Can we, let's be a little bit more. Let's try to be a little bit more civil.
No.
In the middle of a snowstorm. So let's try to be just a little bit
more
simple.
It's got a fatty, Eric.
Right,
let's
roll
it. Snowstorm has got a fatty.
Let's roll it back a little. Let's pull it back a little bit,
okay?
Okay.
See, we missed you from last
week. It's not a party line.
Back off,
yeah,
Byron.
Okay. So maybe we'll delete
this
one
out. I'm off of it. I'm off of it.
But yeah. So
got it.
Yeah. How about those Oscars? So we got a couple of black people that won the Oscars the other day. The brother who wrote Get Out.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you guys saw that movie. You saw that. So the guy that wrote Get Out did win an Academy Award for Best Screenplay the other night.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele. And it was an excellent movie. I don't know if either of you guys saw that or anybody saw that. Like I said, we went to see it, Ma. And
I remember.
I thought
it was
impressive. I don't know if
mm-hmm.
either one of you guys, Wayne or Byron, got a chance to see it, but it was a pretty interesting movie, and it dealt interestingly with race relations, and ironically, I guess some things are on his mind, being that he's in an interracial relationship. Talking about Jordan Peele, the director.
Mm.
You were going to say Byron or Wayne?
Get a chance to see it, but I'm familiar with I didn't see the movie, but I'm familiar with his work, and it seems like he picked up quite a few, not just the Oscar, but I mean he's been lauded for having come up with some great material. There's a lot of stuff out there now that I wish I can just get the time to go out there and see, or at least wait for it to come to the little screen, you know, but. It's just I'm so proud of what changes that have been made. You know, even the young lady from Yonkers here, Mary J. Blige, the fact that she was nominated in the category she didn't win, but the fact that she was just in the arena, you know, meant a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Did you see Mudbound?
No, I didn't. I apologize.
I
you know, I've been. Dealing with storm damage and angry tenants. I'm sorry, you know.
Right.
I saw the movie. I enjoyed it. What I found very interesting, and I'm very proud of Mr. Peele's achievement, because historically this was African-American history in the field of entertainment, having to be the first to be awarded as a screenwriter. And I think that's so critical, because it is about the story. Now, as far as the category that he was in, some of the Academy wanted to identify it as a comedy, but as a horror film, which is interesting, because the winner of the best film was actually a remake of The Swamp Thing, which was a grade B, grade C movie. So, I mean, at the point in which, yes, horror film genre is elevated now, but to me, the horror of racism, it will always be a horror film, okay? And you can tell that story, and it will supersede all zombie movies, all sci-fi movies that are about horror flicks like The Alien. You tell me when we can stop having racism be a horror to our African-American and people of color in this country.
And it was also interesting
Wayne Gilden, do you remember Sophia Stewart? You remember Sophia?
Sophia?
Matrix?
No.
Matrix? Remember we had her on the air?
Okay.
Yes.
I had her on
Matrix.
The air. She wrote Matrix.
Yeah.
And she won
that.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Remember that?
Okay. Yeah.
I talked to her the other day, and she is going to be coming on the show. Matrix.
Oh, that's great.
The writer
that's
of
great.
Matrix.
Is
remember
she
that
working
big
on
yes.
some, she's working on
she
something
wanted,
new now.
I don't know
yeah.
what she's working on now. She'll let us know. But she won that case. She's going to tell us
right.
about the amount of money that she won at big money.
Now, I remember Matrix, you know, and it did well. But, you know, but I agree. I mean, we're in a completely different arena now. I don't know. I guess with all the criticism that the Academy has had in the last maybe 3 to 4 years. They're doing things now to show more inclusion, you know, and it's not just with people of color alone. I mean, even the international films and other artists or other nationalities are being recognized, and I just think that's important because it's the world we live in.
Yeah, that's a good thing. It was a very diverse Oscars this year. With a number of people involved and in front of the camera. I wonder how many people were actually involved behind the camera. That would truly make it diverse in terms of producers and directors and technical people on the show. So, I think one thing, Eric.
I mean, I'm not an audiophile. I mean, the closest I've been to one is just in front of a microphone for most of my life. But I heard one of the actresses, and if I'm not mistaken, there might have been a white actress who said that, you know, we have these cameras now in all of our telephones, the smartphones particularly. And, you know, there's enough stuff going on probably right in your neighborhood. I know right in mine and quite frankly, right around my house that you can make a movie out of. And it sounds very, I meant that as a joke, you know, but the bottom line is that, you know, it's interesting where we can just come up with just subject matter that can relate to an audience and for once in our lives that, you know, the playing field is level. I mean, all you have to do is just to come up with something that's marketable and try to find the financing for it, even if it's a GoFundMe page. And, you know, voila, you have something. You know, years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about how Spike Lee started, and you know, it's hard to believe that She's Got to Have It is almost 30 years old. I know you've had a relationship with Spike. You know, it wasn't
easy
then.
I was in the movie.
And exactly, you know. You were in that one as well?
Yeah, I actually was in rehearsal with him actually before that with one which eventually became Crooklyn, was about the passing of his mother. Eventually it became Crooklyn.
But
at that time the money fell through, speaking of financing, and is when history ensued and Spike wrote She's Gotta Have It. We're about coming up on another minute. It's been an eventful show. Time to wrap it up a little bit on this Wednesday evening's blizzard. Hopefully it's the last nor'easter here on the East Coast.
I hope so, God.
gentlemen, Byron Saunders. Fellows.
Yes, Eric. Thank you so very much. My hero of the week is that little young lady, Parker Curry, and in respect to how art has impacted on our lives, she's staring at that picture of portrait of Michelle Obama. That's the hero of
the week. That was great. Yeah, that was absolutely wonderful.
Peace and love.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Wayne
Great
Gilman.
Show, guys.
See you later, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah,
nice
thank
fire.
You, and, you know, God help us all. That's what I can say.
Yeah. You ain't never lied, brother. All right, good night, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
All right. Peace and love.
Gentlemen, thank you. This has been the Kate Thompson Live Show. You can listen every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. live for a live show, or it's archived. You can listen to it anytime. I can't see you. And you can listen to it anytime. I'm the son, Citizen Payne, Eric Payne, and you are, lady?
Kate Thompson from Kate Thompson Live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Tune us in every week. Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Ahem.